This week on Business Brief, we'll hear about how one Missouri town is gearing up for tourism ahead of next week's eclipse. Then we'll learn more about the Missouri fur trade. Welcome to Business Brief, Missouri Business Alert's podcast focused on the business news and issues shaping the state. My name is Siggy Reese, and I'm joined by my co-host, Ansley Franco. Ansley, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing so good. I am really looking forward to the weather kind of mellowing out. I don't know. It's been a bit everywhere recently. What do you think?
No, the weather's been insane. It's like thunderstormed the past, what, like 3 days? I mean, it's nice today.
Yeah.
We're recording on Thursday, by the way.
But there's a freeze warning.
Are you serious? I didn't see that.
Yeah.
No.
But I was in Springfield a few days ago, and there was a tornado warning.
Yeah, I heard there were tornado warnings like across the state.
Yeah, yeah, it was a little scary. And then I have a friend down in the south, and they also got a tornado warning. And I was like, what is happening?
Yeah.
But yeah, the weather. I just really, really want it to be nice and sunny. Whether it's windy and cold or sunny and like bright and warm, I just need the sun.
Right. No, like I don't care. I mean, I'd prefer it to be like 50s and 60s, but like sunny.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would... I really am kind of sick of the cloudy.
Ditto.
Kind of, yeah.
Enough of it.
Yes. Anyways, are you ready to get into this week's headlines?
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it. Jackson County voters rejected the extension of a stadium sales tax this week, creating uncertainty about the future homes of the Kansas City Chiefs and Royals. The proposed question would have extended a current 3/8 set sales tax to 2064. The current tax is set to expire in 2031. Revenue from the proposed extension would have been used to fund a new Royal Stadium in downtown Kansas City, as well as renovations to the Chiefs' Arrowhead Stadium. The team spent about $3 million on the Yes campaign, but were ultimately voted down as No received 58% of the vote.
Meanwhile, in St. Louis, voters approved two sewer district proposals. One proposal will increase residential customers' bills by about 7% annually over the next 4 years. The pay hikes will fund the next stage of reducing sewage overflows into waterways during storms. Voters also approved a residential property tax increase, which will fund solving flash flooding and erosion issues. That same ballot proposal also includes a charge of $1.05 for every 1,000 square feet of surfaces that don't absorb rainwater, like parking lots.
The federal government increased its estimate of U.S. economic growth during the fourth quarter of last year. The government now estimates the economy grew at a rate of 3.4% from October to December 2023, rather than a previous estimate of 3.2%. This was still a decrease from the third quarter, where the economy grew at a rate of nearly 5%.
The U.S. Small Business Administration is offering economic disaster loans to some types of small businesses in 57 Missouri counties. Some counties in Kansas, Iowa, and Illinois are also eligible. This comes after the U.S. Department of Agriculture declared a disaster in the area late last month. Small non-farm businesses or agriculture cooperatives, along with aquaculture and private nonprofits, are able to apply for up to $2 million in loans.
St. Louis-based grocery chain Schnucks is partnering with an Indiana nonprofit to launch a business accelerator program called Schnucks Springboard. The program aims to help grow businesses owned by diverse founders and will offer classes on a range of food business topics, plus networking opportunities. Schnucks Springboard also includes an in-store product trial at Schnucks stores, as well as $5,000 in funding. The program is accepting applications until May 12th, and 10 businesses will be selected. We will return to Business Brief after this quick message from our sponsors.
Are you ready to be inspired? Since 2013, That's What She Said has provided a platform for women's powerful voices, strengthening communities across the country. On Saturday, April 13th at 7 p.m. at the Missouri Theater, the second annual That's What She Said Columbia, presented by Stevens College, will feature the powerful stories of 10 women from our community. 25% of the ticket sales will support maternal health initiatives via the Boone Hospital Foundation and MU Healthcare. Find us at facebook.com/shesaidcomo and purchase your tickets now.
For our next story, I'm joined by Missouri Business Alert reporter Trey Kent. Thanks for joining us, Trey.
Happy to be here.
You wrote a story recently about the business and economic significance of the upcoming solar eclipse. But before we get into the business details, can you give us a quick refresher on some of the basics of this cosmic event?
Sure. On Monday afternoon, the eclipse will carve out a path of total darkness, or totality, across parts of the country. In the United States, the path of totality stretches from Texas through Maine.
And that includes some of Missouri, right?
That's right. A portion of South Central and Southeast Missouri will experience a few minutes of total darkness around 2 in the afternoon. The affected regions include places like Cape Girardeau, Farmington, and West Plains.
I've heard talk about eclipse tourism or people traveling to locations in that path. I understand you looked at one particular town bracing for an influx of eclipse tourists.
I did. I talked to people about preparations in Poplar Bluff, which has a population of about 16,000 people. Local officials say they expect around 20,000 visitors to Poplar Bluff for the event. That would be more than double the number of people in the town.
Wow. And what does this mean for the local economy?
Well, I spoke to Steve Halter, president of the local Chamber of Commerce. He says the town expects an incremental economic impact of up to $7 million.
That's huge. That gives us additional sales tax revenue for a city and county to have funds to take to more services for the citizens.
Halter says the community has been preparing for the eclipse for years.
We started probably a year and a half to 2 years ago planning in our community. We wanted it to not just happen, but we wanted to actually have an event around it.
So what will the next few days look like in Poplar Bluff? What are some of the events happening?
Festivities are kicking off Friday and run through Monday. They include live music, fireworks, a half marathon, and presentations on celestial topics.
Okay, a wide variety of options. And the thousands of visitors will need a place to stay, right?
Exactly. One of the biggest challenges is lodging for all the visitors. The area has about 600 hotel rooms, and Halter says most of them have been booked for a long time now. Some residents are opening up their yards as parking spots for recreational vehicles, and others are listing them on vacation rental sites.
Huh, sounds like a big couple of days for hotels and short-term rentals. What other types of businesses are expecting a surge?
Well, restaurants are preparing to feed eclipse tourists. I spoke to Leanna Alexander from Myrtle's Place, a family-owned restaurant in downtown Poplar Bluff. Myrtle's Place is offering a special menu loaded with lunar-themed items. Crescent rolls, moon pancakes, and black hole coffee served in a souvenir cup.
Moon pancakes? It sounds like the businesses are really leaning into the theme and having some fun with the eclipse.
Definitely. Locals are calling the event a total eclipse of the bluff. They're selling koozies, stickers, and even moon-shaped stress balls. For $20, you can buy a t-shirt that says, "I got mooned in Poplar Bluff."
That's great. It sounds like the town is ready for its big day.
Yep. Alexander says people are eager to make the most of their interaction with the thousands of eclipse visitors.
Hopefully they'll create memories and at least talk about us. And if they, they're not coming back through our area, maybe they'll tell someone else who is.
Well, Trey, thank you again for joining us.
Yep, glad to do it.
For more in Poplar Bluff and its encounter with eclipse tourism, you can find Trey's story at MissouriBusinessAlert.com.
For our next story, we turn once again to fur trapping.
News with the fur?
Yep, this is part 2 of our look at that industry, which we produced through a collaboration with KBIA.
Okay, so what's the story this week?
Well, as we heard last episode, trapping is one of Missouri's oldest industries, and it's a business that plays an important role in conservation. Rebecca Smith of KBIA has that story.
This is KBIA News. I'm Anna Speidel. The fur industry has a long history in the state of Missouri, and while it looks different now, it's still around. KBIA's Rebecca Smith recently went to the annual Missouri Fur Auction and brings us this look at fur trapping's role in the community and in conservation.
6-year-old Colt Comer is one of the youngest people in sight. As older folks grab a cup of coffee or chow down on a plate of biscuits and gravy, he's brushing beaver pelts, prepping them for sale at the annual Missouri Fur Auction.
Fun to be outside.
Yeah, but the worst thing is when you fall in the water.
When you fall in the water?
He's been fur trapping for a little more than a year now, alongside his father, Jared, and one of their elderly neighbors.
He's in his upper 80s, and he wanted to pass on the heritage and how to do it, and we started helping him, and then it's led into we're trapping all on our own now.
Now, trapping has a long history in Missouri. According to the Missouri Department of Conservation, both Native Americans and early settlers in the state helped to make Missouri the hub of the Western fur trade for many years. But it has seen a sharp decline as anti-fur activism has grown.
To be able to pass this down to my kids means everything to me.
And I got 10 over here looking for a
As the morning rolls on, more than 100 people arrive at the Montgomery County Fairground with pelts of fur-bearing animals, like raccoons, otters, and coyotes. Most of them are members of the Missouri Trappers Association, which hosts the auction.
Our main goal is continued education.
That's Charles Samuels. He's the president of the organization and has been a member for 37 years. He began trapping as a kid to make a little pocket money.
We can't continue as a sport if we don't educate the new kids on how to do it properly, how to use their equipment, and the ethics that go along with it.
This code of ethics includes things like avoiding overharvesting, using humane traps and dispatching or killing animals quickly and painlessly, utilizing as much of the animal as possible, and following all state regulations, including checking traps every single day.
I was surprised the number of people that thought that trap caused the animal a lot of pain. It doesn't. It just holds him there till you get there in the morning.
Trapping is also a traditional method of population control. Steve Kistner is a Missouri conservation agent in Callaway County. He's been to most of the auctions since 2012.
We are the primary management of these animals. We help maintain them at a healthy level.
He says since the demand for raccoon pelts has declined, due in part to international trade tariffs with Russia and China, trappers have been catching fewer, which he says has led to many calls to the Missouri Department of Conservation for more human-animal conflicts, like raccoons moving into someone's attic.
While nature will control it, nature doesn't always control it as pretty. You look at disease, you look at roadkill.
Kistner says while trapping is a, quote, consumptive act, at the end of the day, there's a reason for it. People are using a skill that was passed down to them. They're utilizing the animals they catch, or they're protecting their livestock. And if done well and ethically, he adds, it can actually benefit Missouri and the health of its animal populations. Back at the auction, Jared and Colt Comer walk around collecting the money they've made from selling their furs. They brought in about $600. Jared says he was pleased to see that prices were up a bit this year.
I'm already thinking that next year I'm going to try to catch more coons now that we see an uptick in the market.
But for now, that $600 is going into a bank account for six-year-old Colt, which he can put towards his future, or more likely, towards some new traps. For KBIA News, I'm Rebecca Smith.
This piece is part of a collaboration with Missouri Business Alert. You can hear more about the changing business of fur on Monday during Morning Edition and All Things Considered. I'm Anna Spital, KBIA News.
It is now time for us to get into our words of the week. Ansley, what's your word this week?
My word is Delta 8.
Okay, so for those who don't know, can you explain what that is?
Sure. Delta 8 is a substance found in cannabis. It's not approved by the Food and Drug Administration, but it's used in a lot of cannabis products, and Delta 8 is legal to sell in Missouri.
Okay, so why is Delta 8 in the news?
State lawmakers have proposed legislation to regulate intoxicating hemp products, which includes those made with Delta 8.
And what would that regulation look like?
Basically, hemp would be regulated in the same way marijuana is. So Delta 8 products would be age-restricted and subject to testing and labeling requirements. They would also be restricted to licensed dispensaries for sale. But the kicker is the state's chemical conversion process ban.
What's that?
Through the current marijuana regulations, the state has a ban on products made with a specific chemical conversion process, and Delta 8 and other hemp products are made through this process. So, if the legislation becomes law, Delta 8 products could become prohibited. That's all I've got this week. What's your word, Siggy?
My words are pet equity.
Pet equity. And what is that?
Okay, so it's sort of a play on words, pet equity, sweat equity, but I'm referring to how private equity firms have been acquiring more veterinary practices across the country. And this comes after pet ownership increased during the pandemic.
Oh, that makes sense. So, how do these firms impact the practices they own?
Well, this isn't the first time we've seen private equity buy up medical practices. There have been a lot of complaints in recent years about private equity's involvement in human healthcare. These firms have been blamed for a bunch of concerns, such as increased prices, cuts in services, and shuttering hospitals.
Gotcha. So, what's happening with veterinarians?
Some emergency clinics are closing, and vets are also saying pet owners aren't getting enough time with doctors to understand more about their pet's care. Some states are trying to prohibit non-veterinarians from owning clinics, so there's much more to come on this story. That's all for me this week. For a closing thought, here's Leanna Alexandra again from Myrtle Place's restaurant in Poplar Bluff, talking about the significance of the solar eclipse.
It's cool just because it's something you don't see very often. But being able to come to, you know, your hometown, like being in your hometown, the path of totality, just like you hope it creates memories for people's families.
Well, that is all for this week. The M33 Project provided the music for this episode. For my co-host Ansley Franco, editors Brianna Davis, Gabriella Lacey, Sharon Rickabdar Xavier, Skylar Rossi, and Michael Stacey, I'm Siggy Reese, and this has been Business Brief. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.